nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said, or you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks and our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM and Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. And we are still asking you this question. Do you agree on eliminating the $45 bus pass and receiving a $25 monthly increase to your PWD, which is the Persons with Disability Payment? The email address for the reply is communityliveringradio@gmail.com. I'm Kelly Rayburn. Across from me is Michael Rubin. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. Had a busy couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So, filming lots of stuff, so, yeah.
Yes, including Just One More Step, one of your projects on that one?
Well, we had our rapid party, and I told everybody how I was actually going to tell the story with the film. Okay. Because there's going to be a book and calendars and all that kind of stuff. So right. With the book, Cheryl Young asked everybody who walked to write a chapter to be part of the book. Mm-hmm. So, you know, their perspective on the whole story of the walk and everything. And so I said, well, that tells me exactly how to produce the movie. Mm-hmm. So what we'll do is everybody writes their chapter, and then I'm going to go back and interview everybody about their chapter in the book, and then we will play highlights of the trip according to that person, and okay. We'll build a whole timeline and move things along through the walk that way. Mm. So it should be a lot of fun, though.
Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, we were yesterday we were shooting a website trailer for the Citizens Media.
Mm-hmm.
With Caroline Smalley, and the day before that we were shooting a trailer for an open door film. Okay. For Peter Daniels. So yeah,
interesting.
Busy right now.
Very busy. Yes. Well, so. As for me, I'm getting prepared for a couple of things. One is on the fare gates on mm-hmm. TransLink, as you may or may not know that some of the fare gates that we normally see are now closed, and that may be concerned of accessibility people, like for a lot of wheelchair people.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to solve that kind of problem is to put in some sort of a special chip or something that will radioactive the gate to activate it open when
right.
attendants aren't around, and nobody will be, well, I would say, well, as all I can say is the SkyTrain attendants or the CBUS attendants or whoever's in charge of the fare gates won't have to be kind of like responsibility to have the gate, one of the gates open when no attendance was or is around.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a solution there to one of the TransLink people's problems there. So what you were saying?
Well, like I said, I've only seen since the fare gates have been, all the fare gates have been proposed to be closed.
Uh-huh.
I've only seen it one time where there was an attendant and it was on the CBUS. And there was a fare gate open for accessibility. It was going from the North Van side going mm-hmm. back to the Waterfront Station. So, it's the only time I've seen that happen. And all the other times I've seen no attendant, all the gates close. So
right,
what if somebody
right.
you know, with an accessibility issue, tries to get through, they they're locked out, right?
Okay. So. All right. So, sorry about this. I was just trying to make maybe do a little thing on something like TED Talks and stuff like that, if you want to talk some issues on TED Talks. This one is on May 14th, 2015 on YouTube, Breaking Barriers of Autism, the paper, The Power of Kindness and Friendship by Benjamin Tarasewicz. I can't even pronounce the name. Tarasewicz. So he talks about a high schooler with autism and provide inspirational stories and tips of reaching out people with differences. Also highlighted are the talents that go along with disability. So we'll play you the clip and, of course, our question, do you agree on eliminating the $45 bus pass and receiving the $25 monthly increase to your persons with disability payment? Email communityliving@gmail.com. They always do an introductory here. Hang on.
Hello, everyone. Benjamin here. I'll just jump right in. I live with autism, but that challenge does not stop me from enjoying my high school classes and from talking with people. I've spent much of my life working to overcome my autism barriers, and I've experienced how unkind people can be when they don't understand something. Teasing and bullying comes to mind. I've also seen the changes that happen when people learn about each other, opening their hearts and connecting. We all have talents to share, and one of my strengths is to get people laughing. So, can I tell you all a joke? Why do seagulls live at the sea? Because if they lived at the bay, they would be bagels. Now, let me tell you about autism in a nutshell. It's when the brain's neural pathways develop differently from the norm, causing a variety of unusual behaviors and perceptions. Autism disrupts a person's language. It blocks their social skills. It can cause strange body motions. And it compels a person to have obsessive interests. In other words, it affects everything in a person's life. Now, understandably, when people see someone like me on stage, they find it hard to believe that autism can really be so debilitating. Well, I'm here to tell you that I struggle daily. I constantly work to compensate for my brain differences. And it's been that way ever since I was a toddler. Just imagine, I had to learn sign language because I was unable to speak. I couldn't learn by imitating as other children do, and there was no such thing as playtime for me because toys were a mystery. I had no idea of what to do with them. Everything that children usually learn through their everyday actions needed to be taught, whether it be eating, speaking, getting dressed, or playing. Every skill had to be broken down into the smallest possible increments. Luckily, my mom dedicated herself to working therapeutically with me all day long. Every day. No matter how hard things got at times, she always aimed for the stars. She always believed in me and believed in my potential to grow. That's one of the biggest gifts and greatest kindnesses you can extend to someone with autism. Believe in them and make sure they know it. Give them opportunities to shine and don't let autism get in the way. Here's how someone outside my family did this. When I was in middle school, kids bullied me in subtle ways. They noticed that I didn't pick up on social nuances, which allowed them to yank my chain pretty easily. One of my teachers recognized that the bullying could be deflected by educating everyone about my autism. She also believed in me and believed in my ability to communicate. So, she invited me to give a talk during health class about living with autism and to answer my classmates' questions. Although the bullies didn't disappear overnight, my openness encouraged other kids to be more supportive and friendly. I gained confidence from speaking out and became recognized as a role model rather than remaining a hidden target. Furthermore, this teacher's insight set me on the road to public speaking. Another gift you can give is to extend yourself in friendship. Take a chance. A friend of mine did this by inviting me to the high school prom when we were both juniors. She knew that I'd always gone to school dances alone and that I longed to be included. She planned for us to be part of a big group, and she thought beyond her own fun. She was willing to make whatever adjustments were needed in order for both of us to enjoy the evening. What a gift that was! I experienced all kinds of firsts that night. I'd never been out to dinner with a date or with a group of friends before. I'd never stayed up half the night with other kids. I'd never before been part of a group sleepover. The friendly adventures that most kids take for granted simply haven't been a part of my life. So that one beautiful invitation gave me an experience I'll remember for always. I encourage you to follow my friend's lead and to bridge the gap. Reach out, even when you're unsure about how things will work out. Grand gestures are awesome, of course, but remember the little daily things, like sitting together during lunch at school or inviting some hang time at your house. Call up on the phone and initiate some plans. I often reach out with suggestions for fun activities because I know all about loneliness. Getting that phone call can mean the world, so try doing that for someone who has trouble reaching out. Here's another tip. Allow yourself some adjustment time when hanging out with someone like me. It's only natural to be surprised by unusual behaviors. Like, if I suddenly start hopping or skipping around, I'm happy, and my body has just taken off without me. Not to worry. You'll get used to my quirks if you take the time. You might also notice me returning to the same topics and ideas during conversations. I work hard at staying aware, but autism makes it easy to get repetitive about things, partly because they seem so interesting and partly because of memory issues. Although for me, memory is not a problem when it comes to jokes. Shall I tell you another one? What kind of vegetable should artists stay away from? Oh, you're right, artichokes. Now, Here's something that can really trip me up. When people say one thing and mean another, I have a hard time interpreting. Most of you pick up on social cues and body language without much thought. But for someone like me, none of this is natural. Instead, it gets learned through repeated drills, role-playing, and much discussion. And a lot of information gets missed anyway. So, when someone says, "Let's get together sometime," I will usually take them at their word instead of guessing. If they didn't really mean it, I'll be stuck with confusion and disappointment. So, here's a suggestion for being kind. Say what you mean, and mean what you say. When talking to someone with autism, let go of vague social phrases. Try being more direct than you are accustomed to. Now, one last story, and I'll wrap it up. People of all different abilities can work together on something creative and meaningful. That really sets the stage for building friendship. One of my greatest joys is singing. And I am part of a musical theater group where kids with special needs are the primary actors. Each of us is paired with someone who can act as mentor, friend, and understudy. I've had the same partner for two different shows, and our teamwork has gotten really solid. It's like having a safety net of friendship both on and off the stage. So I can have a hard day without feeling embarrassed. And if I fluff my lines, my mentor will cue me without making it obvious. He's figured out ways to help me and has been open about asking what works. And when he gives a high five or encouraging comment, it's really sincere. The sense of support in our theater group is awesome, and in the end, we create something that is so much bigger than ourselves. My wish is for every town to have situations like this, where people break down barriers and create something amazing. It takes only one or two passionate people to spearhead such a group. Maybe it could be you. That's a big dream. But everyone can do the little things that make all the difference, just like the people I've told you about. They had no idea they were making such an impact, but their kindnesses have helped shape my life. And now, I'm handing on the kindness. I know the happiness of being included. I also know the pain of loneliness, and I'm sure you all can relate. Now, since that first prom invitation, I've been asking girls to school dances. And these days, I'm always thinking about who might need a hand with being included. I also share stories about autism because I want to help connect people. So join me. Let's all create some magic. Reach out, be kind, and break those barriers. Thank you.
Breaking Barriers of Autism by Benjamin Tereskiwisk. I can't even pronounce that name, but anyway, so.
But you shared it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, and you can share it on Facebook because we posted it on our Facebook page, Community Living Radio Show. And that is on Facebook. We're going to come right back in a moment with more stuff here on the Community Living Show. Our question, do you agree on eliminating the $45 bus pass and receiving a 52-monthly increase to your PWD, person with disability payment, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. We will be back in a moment.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Hey, why so sad?
Oh, nothing, really.
Not very convincing, Jane girl. Whatever it is, I've got just the cure for it.
One, two, three, four.
Did you know CITR has a women's collective? This brand new collective is all about providing and fostering a community for women who are or who want to be in radio, fighting the gender disparity in media, and centering women's voices and issues. If you are a female-identified person or ally who's already involved in radio or wants somewhere to start, this collective is for you. Email womenscollective@citr.ca for more information and to get involved.
And tune in Friday at 6 p.m. for the collective show, Lady Radio, featuring music, interviews, events, news, commentary. Basically anything we care to talk about. See you then.
Well, how do you like it?
There's only one word for it. Terrific.
You know, I'm so proud of it, it's almost indecent of me.
Welcome to Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm Kelly Rayburn with the full hour and half hour shows, Co-op Radio and CITR, both in Vancouver. And along with me is Michael Rubin.
Hey.
Hi. You've been working on your computer since 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. It's basically sharing a bunch of posts that you had posted.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. And of course.
From off the Community Living page.
Yeah.
You know. So, getting more check us out over there.
Yeah, getting more important information to our audiences. And, of course, you do. If you do have a Facebook account, not many people have Facebook accounts, just to let you know. And if you do have a Facebook account and if you want to get on there, community, it's the word Community Living Radio Show. That's our search word. And ask us to subscribe you, and we'll let you do it.
Yeah.
All right. I have here. This has happened a while ago. This happened 2 years ago, and basically, this is all about on Inclusion BC. This has nothing to do with the bus pass, although I want to ask you a question. Do you agree on eliminating $45 bus pass and receiving a $25 monthly increase on PWD payment? Email communitylivingradio@gmail.com. Of course, you can also sign the petition as well, inclusionbc.org, to sign up the petition on not getting the $25 bus pass monthly fee situation. So I'll get that out of the way on that part. But I'm gonna ask you, have you signed the petition?
No, I haven't. I need to
you
find
still got
the,
time.
I need to find that link and sign.
Inclusionbc.org. That's the website for it. And they'll have it right in the front of the page, and you click on that and That's how you do it.
So. Yeah, it's really that simple. I could probably do it right now.
Yeah, you can. You can do it now, right through until the end of August. Hopefully the end of August. So sign up the petition. So this is a different subject matter on Inclusion BC. This is on Stop Hurting Kids. This happened on November 22nd, 2013. So it's about 3 years ago. So,
but it's still a very important topic.
It is a very important topic. So, so let's get on to that, and we'll come right back in a moment.
I appreciate your commitment to doing the absolute best by your children, which is all of your children, both of your children, but in particular Sahara. So thank you for telling your story. And it's a story of what can be done that's good, and what can be done that impacts everybody in a positive way, and what the joy that your daughter brings. And so thank you for sharing that. I'd next like to introduce to you Dr. Pat Miranda, and we are homies as of today. We did a tag team on The Current this morning, and we did the CBC Almanac yesterday, so way to go, Pat. And my real pleasure. Pat has been a part of our organization and our association for many years, and she steps up when we ask her, and she's blunt, and she's direct, and she's funny, and she's everything that you'd want from a university professor. So, and she has a way of answering questions that really cut to the heart of what we need to talk about. Dr. Pat Miranda is currently the professor in the Department of Educational and Counseling Psychology at the University of British Columbia, where she has been on the faculty since 1996. She's also a board-certified behavior analyst. And in 2004, Dr. Miranda received the Killam Faculty Teaching Prize from the Faculty of Education at UBC. And she was named Fellow of the American Speech-Language Hearing Association. In 2008, she was named Fellow of the International Society for Augmentative and Alternative Communication. And in 2009, she became Director for the Center of Interdisciplinary Research and Collaboration on Autism at UBC. And I was cautioned not to say all of those things, Pat, but I felt I wanted to anyways, because you don't like those kinds of introductions. But I think it's important to do it anyway. And I want everyone here to know that what you bring to this conversation, just in and of yourself, but also in the work that you do. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Pat Miranda.
Thanks, Faith. What do I touch here to make this happen? That era. Okay, good. All right. So, Vianne did a terrific job of giving us a worldview of inspiration, and thank you, Jessica, for sharing your family's story. They got to do the inspiring part. I get to do the sort of, you know, academic part. So I'm going to take a little bit different tact on this and maybe just talk about the alternatives in some concrete terms, because I think it's important to understand that there are indeed alternatives to seclusion and restraint. I think the most distressing thing for me about this conversation, well, about the results of the survey and the conversation, is that we know how to do this differently, right? This is not a secret, right? There's a lot of research and a lot of literature out there that is available to teachers and administrators and parents who don't mind reading academic journals and other kinds of places to be able to talk about what it is that we can do differently to prevent these things. So that's really what I want to focus on a bit. We've already looked at definitions, so I just want to review this, and I'm doing this for a reason, because I think it's important to understand what restraint and seclusion is and what it's not. So I think of restraint as the use of physical procedures or mechanical devices that limit freedom of movement for an extended period of time. So an example, obviously, is holding an individual in an immobile position for an extended period of time. We've heard about prone restraints and, you know, so forth and so on. A non-example, behavior analyst that I am, I have to always give examples and non-examples, are things like holding or blocking a student's hand very briefly to prevent that student from grabbing another student or hitting himself, right? Now, in a sense, that's restraint, but it's not big R restraint, it's little R restraint, and in emergency situations, which we're going to talk a lot about in the next 20 minutes, that kind of intervention might be necessary. Another example is using a belt or a strap or another device to fasten someone to a chair. We've heard about that. And I'm not talking about someone who needs to have a lap belt to be held properly in a wheelchair. I'm talking about someone who's literally strapped in a chair so that person can't get out when he or she wants to. But a non-example is, for example, using a car lock on a door to prevent somebody who's inside the car from opening the door and flinging themselves into traffic when they have a history of doing that. I mean, I think that the distinction between big R restraint and reasonable caution is very important here, because I hear from my colleagues who are supporting adults, for example, that they're being told that they can't do the car lock thing because that's restraint. Well, if you've got a history of flinging open the door and throwing yourself into traffic, until we teach you another way of solving whatever problem you're trying to solve with that, pushing down the car lock is not a bad idea, right? I mean, my rule is if I would do it to a non-disabled adult relative in certain circumstances, then it's okay to do to a kid. If my relative had Alzheimer's and was trying to leave the house and walk around the neighborhood unprotected, I would lock the front door, right? I would put the car lock down if this was my relative trying to get out of the car. So I do think that the distinction between reasonableness and not okay is very important to make here. And I say this largely because many of you are my education colleagues, and I know that you're often in situations where reasonable measures need to be taken in emergency situations. Okay, so we're going to come back to that in a second. Okay, so this is my hit on restraint, not restraint, right? I'll do the same thing with seclusion. By the way, you can disagree with me about any of this. That's just fine. We can have a conversation about this later. In the hallway. So I think about seclusion as being placement in an isolated area for an extended period of time and being prevented from leaving that area. Like, you're not allowed to leave, okay? So placing an individual in a locked room or in a room where a person of authority blocks exit, right? So it's not locked, but I'm not letting you leave, right? That's not okay. That's seclusion. Sending a student to sit on a chair for a few minutes to think about the fact that he just threw a book across the room in the corner of the classroom in full view of everyone, not so much. So this isn't about timeout, not timeout, in my mind. It's about it's literally about seclusion. I think that's a very important word to use. Right? Is the student being isolated from peers for an extended period of time, and that isolation is initiated by an adult and terminated by an adult? Okay? It's not, here's a space, I'm feeling myself becoming frustrated, I'm a student now, I'm feeling myself becoming frustrated and overwhelmed, I ask if I can go to that space for a while because I need some space. I'm allowed to go there. The door is open. I'm not prevented from leaving. I go in and take a few deep breaths or do a math problem or two, right? Chill out. And then I leave when I'm ready to leave and come back and join the group, right? So this isn't about, is there a place? It's about who sends me there, who tells me I should come out, and when am I going there? Am I going there before I have a problem to calm myself down, or am I going there after I have a problem because I'm out of control now and you don't know what else to do? Does that make sense? I mean, I think these are these may seem like ivory tower academic distinctions, but I don't think they are. I think they're very important to think about when we're having this conversation. Okay, so a couple of myths about, I'm using r/s for restraint seclusion. A couple of myths about restraint seclusion, some of which have already been dealt with, so I don't want to belabor this. Myth number one is that the restraint and or seclusion are effective strategies for reducing, in the long term, the frequency of destructive, disruptive, or dangerous behaviors, right? Like, this is actually therapeutic somehow. No. Okay, I will tell you flat out, no. Restraint and seclusion have no research evidence to support the likelihood that they're going to reduce problem behavior in the long run, and that they have therapeutic value. And as you saw in the video, in the film, they often have anti-therapeutic value, both for the people who are experiencing it and the people who are watching it being experienced. And, oh, by the way, let's not leave the third group of people out of the picture. The educational assistants, teachers, and administrators who engage in these practices are also not having fun, right? It is also traumatic for those people to have to engage in these practices when they feel like they don't have any alternative, right? Nobody's going like, well, I restrained a kid 3 times today. How many did you do? You know, I got 3. You only got 2. I won today. I did worse than you did. Nobody's having this conversation, right? This is not pleasant for the people who are having to do it either. And I think that's a really important thing to say, right? Because sometimes I think it sounds like maybe somebody thinks this is swell, and it's not swell. Myth number two, including restraint and seclusion in safety plans, oh, we are going to talk about safety plans now, is sufficient as a strategy for supporting students with destructive, dangerous, and disruptive behavior. Safety plans are WorkSafe BC requirements, right? Plans that are designed to protect staff from getting hurt. They're WorkSafe BC requirements, right? Often, when students have dangerous, disruptive, or destructive behavior, the only thing in place is the safety plan because, well, that's what WorkBC says. We gotta have one, so here it is. A safety plan is not a behavior support plan. A safety plan is for the staff. It is not a behavior support plan. Now, good safety plans will have some of the elements of a good behavior support plan, but they're designed for different purposes and they're directed at a different audience. Restraint and seclusion procedures are only appropriate in emergency situations that are outlined very specifically in the safety plan. The problem with many safety plans is that they're not very good either. Right? People are not writing good safety plans that are comprehensive. So the safety plan also isn't helpful in these situations. So let's talk about this issue of emergency procedure, because I think that that's a very important concept as well. I define an emergency situation as an unanticipated event, like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Unanticipated event that involves serious injury or threat of injury to the person who's engaging the behavior or to other people. Unanticipated means it's never happened before. Or maybe it's happened once before, but it hasn't happened twice yet. So my rule is, and again, it's my rule, so you can disagree with it, is if it's happened once, it's probably going to happen again. If it happens twice, it's for sure going to happen again, right? Once the same behavior kind of episode has happened for the same student twice, don't hold your breath that it's not going to happen a third time and a fourth time and a fifth time and a sixth time, because it will. We now have a pattern emerging here. And once it's happened no more than twice, ideally only once, but no more than twice, we need to embark on a whole set of processes that we know can be effective. First of all, we need a safety plan that complies with WorkSafe BC requirements to protect staff, fair enough, and it should be a good safety plan. We need, for the student, a functional behavior assessment that's designed to identify the answer to the question, why is this student engaging in behavior of this nature in these circumstances. What's going on for this student? How are his needs being met by engaging in this behavior, right? That's a comprehensive process that in some school districts there's expertise to execute, and in many school districts, sadly, there's not. And there needs to be. In every school district in the province, my magic wand, if I can wave it, says there are people in every school district who really know how to do comprehensive functional behavior assessments. And on the basis of those, design comprehensive, not just what do we do after he loses it, but how do we prevent him from losing it in the first place, behavior support plans, right? Staff are trained to execute those behavior support plans. They don't have to be trained a lot because they were part of developing the plan in the first place. So this is not a model whereby an expert flies in, does the assessment, does a plan, says, here's your plan, and leaves. This is a model whereby someone who knows how to do it works with the people who are working with the student, does the assessment together with them, designs the plan together with them, figures out how to execute the plan together with them, monitors the plan together with them, and if it's not working, changes the plan together with everyone else. Okay, so this isn't an expert model. This is a collaborative model of working as a team to figure out the answer to this solution. What's a functional behavior assessment? Short course here for those of you who aren't familiar with the term. The goal is to identify the function of the problem behavior and how it's working for the student. Because it's working. If he's doing it time after time, he's getting something out of engaging in this behavior. The question is, what's he getting out of it, and how can we help him get something else, get that same thing by doing something else? So it includes descriptions of a number of factors that we know from research affect and influence problem behavior, distance setting events, events that trigger the problem behavior, a description of the problem behavior itself, a description of what usually happens after the problem behavior, because if he's doing the problem behavior time after time, whatever is happening afterwards is actually maintaining it, right? As in keeping it going, so we need to figure out how is it being kept going. These are all functional behavior assessment pieces. And on the basis of that, we then design a support plan. A support plan that's technically sound, that's based on the laws of behavior. You don't have to be a behavior analyst to understand that there are laws in the universe that we have no control over. Like, if I get up on the roof of the building here at Douglas College and I say I don't believe in gravity and I jump off, I will fall, right? Gravity is a law of the universe, and whether I believe in it or not, or know anything about it or not, it affects me if I contradict it. The laws of behavior are like that too. They exist in the universe. If I'm not aware of them, or I say I don't believe in them, which is even worse, too bad, so sad, they're going to affect me anyway, right? So I need to understand how to design a technically accurate behavior support plan that's contextually appropriate. That means it can actually be done in the classroom where the student and in the school where the student is included, right? Not in some like abstract clinic somewhere, but in the school. And that ultimately the goal of that support plan is to enhance quality of life. I want the student to have a better life, not just less behavior, but a better life, because of this support plan. And that means that it has to have a number of elements. It have to have strategies that are addressed at the setting events, that are addressed at the antecedent triggers. The most important thing is that the support plan has to have strategies for teaching alternative replacement behaviors, so that he has another way of meeting his needs that doesn't consist of behaviors that require restraint or seclusion, right? There's a whole array of strategies that need to go into the support plan, right? And we know this approach works. This isn't me, like, hoping that maybe if we did this, perhaps it would be effective for a kid or two. We know this works. There has to be the assessment, there has to be the support plan, and there has to be a safety plan that protects staff. Fair enough, right? And the elements of the safety plan also have to are also going to match in some ways the elements of the behavior support plan. So the safety plan is also going to describe, for example, minor problem behavior that acts as a signal that a big problem behavior is about to follow. We call them whispers of problem behavior. Because if I can intervene at the whisper stage, I prevent the big behavior from occurring. That needs to be in the safety plan, because that's an important thing for staff to know. I need to know when I see the whispers, how do I then de-escalate the behavior? Then, not after he's lost it and I now have to restrain or seclude, but then when I see the first whisper, how do I bring it down and help the student resolve it better?
We're going to continue on with this subject. It's called Stop Hurting Kids. This was back on November 22nd, 2013, published on Inclusion BC through Facebook. We forwarded it down to our Community Living Show page if you want to hear the whole process again. We're going to come right back with more in just a moment. You're tuned into the Community Living Show now on the hour show. We just skipped our station ID break, but we will be get caught up in just a moment.
The 39th Annual Vancouver Folk Music Festival. Over 60 acts from 18 countries on 7 summer beachfront stages. Come discover a world of amazing music.
This year's exciting lineup includes Bruce Coburn, The New Pornographers, and Lord Huron, plus many more to discover.
The Vancouver Folk Music Festival, July 15th to 17th at Jericho Beach Park.
Get your tickets today online at thefestival.bc.ca. Brought to you by CITR.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Hi there. Are you tired of listening to the same music day in and day out?
Oops, that was one of the promos. Anyways, we're back on the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. What's on for next week's show before we continue on? Do you know? Do you have anybody?
No, I don't have anybody as yet, but I could have somebody by the end of this show.
Okay, well, I could have somebody for next week's show.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, well, let's figure it out.
Fingers crossed, but we're trying to do a project. We mentioned about this last week, or we were talking about getting together with disabilities on a daily life. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to be doing I'm hoping to do the interview next week when we have our first guest. So
right.
So it's basically is about they're people with everyday lives on disability, but still, you know, do their daily regular basis that they do.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's the project that we're going to be doing. So, back to Inclusion BC on Pat Miranda on the topic Stop Hurting Kids, dated back on November 22nd, 2013.
If that doesn't happen and we get to the big guns behavior, how do I do a restraint and or seclusion procedure that's going to be as brief as possible, as less intrusive as possible, and is not going to happen very often? And how am I going to debrief after the incident? How am I going to debrief staff? How am I going to debrief the other students? How am I going to document every single episode and inform parents? This is what a safety plan should look like. Right? This is what a safety plan should look like. Most safety plans don't have most of these elements in them. Okay? So we know how to do this. We know what the alternatives are, and we have the expertise in the province to be able to execute these alternatives in every single school, in every single school district. Right? if we had the training available to staff, we could make this happen, right? There would not be, does that mean there would never be any more restraint or seclusion? No, there still may be emergency episodes. But emergency means emergency. It doesn't mean ongoing routine practice. This is happening day in and day out, right? There's a big difference there. So here are the red flags that I want to leave you with. How do you know if you've got a problem? Restraint and seclusion are used routinely, and by routinely I mean daily, weekly, I would even say monthly, right? Because if I've got a good behavior support plan in place, I shouldn't have to restrain or seclude a kid even once a month. There's no functional behavior assessment, or if there is, it's half-assed. Sorry. There's no behavior support plan in place that was designed in consultation with parents and the rest of the staff who are involved. Maybe there is a support plan in place. Somebody came in, threw one down on the desk, and left. That's not good enough. There's no safety plan that has, or the safety plan is used instead of the behavior support plan or as a behavior support plan, and they are two entirely different things. Staff haven't been trained to implement the support plan or the safety plan properly. Right? So there's no training that's gone on, no ongoing support and training. There are no data. Red flag number one, how many times did you have to restrain him last week? Oh, well, gee, let me see. Did you do it Monday? I can't remember. Did you do it Tuesday? There are no data. Every single episode needs to be recorded because we need to know the answer to the question, is the support plan working? And if the support plan is working, there should be fewer and fewer episodes over time. If I don't have data, I don't know whether that's happening or not. Parents aren't informed of every single instance of restraint and seclusion. And if it's not working, there are no revisions to the plan, right? It's not about having a plan. It's about having an effective plan. I've designed lots of behavior support plans in my life, and I have to tell you, probably 25% of the time, I'm being generous to myself now, the first plan I design solves the problem. Right? Usually, the first plan I design gets me some progress, but then I need to go back and tweak it, right? Right? And now the second plan, things are better. And by the third plan, usually, you know, we've got the situation under control. But it's not, this isn't about having a plan and that's the plan. So I have a knock in the engine of my car. I go to a mechanic with my car. I say, fix the knock in my engine. He charges me $300. He says, I've fixed the knock in your engine. On the way home from the auto body from the auto shop, I hear the knock in my car. Choice A. My car is irretrievably damaged. The knock will always be there. An expert has seen the car, tried to fix it, failed, and so I just have to put up with the knock for the rest of my life. Choice B, I need to find another mechanic. Okay? What we're doing when we're using restraint and seclusion on a persistent basis is we're saying choice A. This kid, we have a plan, we got the experts in, we made a plan, it's not working, we have to restrain and seclude, we have no choice. The kid is irretrievably broken. No. We need to go to a different mechanic. Right? We need to bring more expertise to bear. We need to bring more people into the situation who have other things in their bag of tricks. Right? We need to be committed to the idea that it's not necessary. This is the language that gets used. That we don't have any choice. He just loses control. It's the only option available. We don't want to do it. But restraint or seclusion are our only options. We cannot believe that. We must believe that there are solutions for every single kid to be meaningfully included without having severe behavior problems in every single school in this province. Thank you.
Okay, so that is the Inclusion BC, and that was the Pat Miranda talking about Stop Hurting Kids. Of course, she's a professor in development of educational counseling, psychology, and special education at the University of British Columbia, where she has been faculty since 1996. Her primary areas of interest are autism, development, disabilities, argumentative and alternative communication, positive behavior support, inclusive education, and literacy development. Of course, you just heard her at Douglas College. That was heard on YouTube on November 22nd, 2013. You can also check that out. We have a link to it on our Facebook page on Community Living Radio Show. Hmm. Michael?
That was an interesting comments? Talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like... I like the analogy between the car and
the engines thing. It's like you're dealing with a rattle for the rest of your lives.
I've had a car that I had to deal with the rattle for the rest of the time I had it. But
yeah,
you know, I did actually go seek another mechanic too.
Mm.
So yeah,
very interesting. I mean, some mechanicals will say, you know, it's no biggie. We'll just leave it as it is, right?
Well, one of the things is I was, because I used to have a daycare,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things that I would notice is maybe I was part of the problem. Maybe it wasn't just the kid. Maybe I was part of it, and then how do I fix part of me so that I can help this child better? Mm. Or should I just back away and let somebody else back away and let the car owner take the car to another mechanic?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, so yeah. You know.
And our question, of course, we will read the answer on our July 28th edition. Do you agree on eliminating the $45 bus pass and receiving a monthly fee increase of $25 to PWD? Our email address, communitylivingradio@gmail.com. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah.
And we'll see you again next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll see you all next week. This has been the Community Living Show. Stay tuned for other shows that are coming in your area throughout the NCAA radio networks. And again, we'll be back again as usual on different stations at, you know, different times. So, and of course, we're on again at 9 o'clock always on our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. Take care, everybody. Bye bye.
is it going to be the most fun? But you should still give it all you've got.
All you've got.
Approach every day as something new.
Something new.
Read books if there's nothing you do.
And poetry too.
Summertime's time where you can choose your plan.
Bake a ham, mold in the sand.
Where, ma'am? That's my jam. Summer, summer, what a bummer. Summer, summer, what a bummer.
Hot, hot, molten hot, molten hot, 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 hot.
Hot, hot, molten hot, molten hot, 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 hot.
Summer was the loneliest season. Every day, all day, it was dry,
so dry.
It was hot,
so hot.
Maybe every day of summer isn't going to be the most fun. But you should still give it all you've got. Approach every day, something new,
something new.
Read books if there's nothing.